Welcome to Nerds at Church, a podcast diving deep into nerdery and the Bible. I'm Pastor Emily, and I use pronouns like they, them, theirs.
And I'm Pastor Kay, and my pronouns are she, her. In this episode, we'll discuss the readings for the 20th Sunday after Pentecost, also known as Lectionary 28 or Proper 23, which this year falls on the 15th of October.
Check out the episode description for links to the Bible passages and other references we make in this episode. Also, as a note, if you are interested in entering Horror Nerds at Church's pet costume contest, you should check out their socials and definitely enter because it's going to be adorable.
So for our deep dive today, because Jesus is telling the parable of the wedding banquet, which is kind of problematic and we'll get into why later, we thought that we would talk about weddings.
Woohoo!
Which can be both fun and delightful and also super melodramatic and, let's call it, interesting is probably a good word for it.
So very Midwestern of you, Kay. Yes. So weddings back in the day, which is to say in biblical times, we don't know a ton about them. And particularly in Jesus' day, Jesus existed in a time of a lot of change for his community. And so there's a lot we don't necessarily know. And we are not here to explain to you how every single piece of traditional wedding liturgy is problematic. Just take our word for it that, like,
a decent chunk of it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to know specifics, I don't know, become a Patreon member and ask us and we'll tell you.
Sure.
But
at great length, I'm sure.
Yes, of course. So back in the day, weddings were a big deal. They were a big event. Like, we think of weddings today and they're a big deal. They're a big deal because they're expensive and fancy and there's all this pressure to be fancy. Weddings in Jesus' time were a big deal because they were a big community event. Because lots of people came and there was lots of involvement in that sense. And less because you had to spend inordinate amounts of money on a dress. Also, one of the things that we can kind of infer from other gospels, particularly the Gospel of John, is that at that time, ritual hand washing before meals was a part of life. And so that's something where, like, we don't necessarily know exactly when it started, but it remains a part of a lot of Jewish traditions today. So that's a kind of cool thing that, like, carries from then and still remains part of the culture.
And shows up in the story of the wedding at Cana.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's part of how we know it. And the wedding at Cana, the number of jars needed for ritual hand washing is what helps us know how big of an event it was, right? That there were that many people there, that weddings were a big deal.
Yeah. Also, figuring out the seating arrangements for a wedding was certainly important back then, just like it is for many people today, if you decide to go that route. Honestly, when I got married, we just had two different color tablecloths and said the groom's side sits at these tables and the bride's side sits at those tables and figure it out for yourselves. But our general rule was we were trying to figure out how to make everything less stressful. So, like, that was what we were going for with everything. So, but also keep in mind when we talk about seating arrangements that they weren't sitting at tables the way we think of doing so, but rather were usually eating and sitting in the Roman way, which is that everyone was slightly reclined on couches. So the way that you had access to talk to the people next to you was a little different because of the reclining arrangement. And so you possibly couldn't speak to as many people as we can today at tables because of how that worked. Also, when we talk about this particular wedding banquet parable, remember that this is not a parable about a random wedding banquet of normal people. Instead, this is a story of the banquet at the wedding of the king's son and presumably future ruler of the folks being invited. So there's a lot of extra weight and, frankly, melodrama attached to it.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. Oof, kings.
Oh, yeah.
And now for the part that you're really interested in, weddings today.
Sure.
So literally both Kay and I are professionals at this. This is part of what we do for a living. So we're going to do a variety of overviews, but the basic parts of a ceremony, I think a lot of people think you have to have these exact words or this exact thing. And there's a lot more diversity in what you can do during a ceremony to end up married.
Yeah.
And there are some states where, like, you don't even technically have to have a ceremony to be married.
Right.
But the basic parts, if you are going to have a wedding ceremony, the basic parts of the ceremony are getting everybody into the space, naming that you're getting married to everybody. Yes. The next part I labeled as, tell me why, because I'm on a 90s boy band's kick, apparently. But that's where we, like, make meaning of it.
What's the point?
Yeah. There are a million ways to come into this space. Processional, dancing, all of those things. There are a lot of different ways to introduce the event. Those tend to be less full of diversity. And it's more like, we're here to support these people who are going to get married. And to make sure that the community gathered is there for the right reasons, too. Right? To name that, like, by being here, you are committing to support these folks getting married as well. The tell me why part is a lot more diverse. So that a lot of times includes readings. They can be scriptural readings. They can be poetry. They can be prose. They can be any kind of readings. It can be times of silence. In the Quaker tradition, there's a lot of, like, spaces for silence. This is where, like, when I officiate, I do a sermon. It's a short one. It's an abbreviated one, but it helps tie everything together. So that can be helpful. But that sort of, like, broad space of doing that, of, like, helping people understand what it means to be getting married. Yeah. And then we have the promises. And this is the part, we call it the vows a lot of the time, but this is where the people getting married are promising to each other and making commitments for their life together.
Yeah.
A few notes on this. There are, like, kind of some pre-written vows, especially if you are doing this out of a religious tradition. Most religious traditions, especially Christianity, we know have, like, here are some suggested vows, which is where you get the, like, till death separates us kind of language for richer and for poorer, all of that stuff. You don't have to use those, though. You can make up your own vows, your own promises, and also don't surprise people with your vows. For sure, like, if you really, really have to surprise your partner, maybe think about why you feel like you have to do that. But also, definitely don't surprise the officiant. It is really helpful for me as an officiant to know what you're going to say. And also then, if you two are totally off base, I can have a conversation with you about that in a way that if you're off base and you don't talk about it and nobody knows, and then you're just there up in front of your family and your friends and everybody who cares about you, and you're totally disconnected, you don't really want that.
Yeah. Also, if one partner has a page and a half and the other partner has six words, it can be a little weird.
Yeah.
So talk to the officiant.
Yeah. And your vows to each other don't have to be different. Like, I have had folks who were, like, thinking of doing different vows, and then one person, like, theirs came together really fast and they shared it and it was beautiful, and we're like, let's just use those ones. Like,
sure.
It worked for both of them because presumably
they want the same things.
Yeah. Making the same promises to each other is not a bad thing. Like,
yeah. Also, historically, having identical vows was actually a movement for equality between people getting married in the marriage partnership. The change to having identical vows was a part of recognizing that both partners were equal partners in the marriage. And so if you want to rest on that historical note, feel free. To be honest, my husband and I used vows out of the book because they sounded very nice, and we were having to do enough work to plan the thing anyway. So...
I was going to say, also, that I think is when they got rid of the honor and obey part, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, honoring your partner is fine. And I've heard people talk about how, you know, if the building was on fire and your partner told you to get out, then you'd obey them. But I don't think we have to go there anymore, so...
Yeah, that's not so much an obey. Yeah, that's just
not really.
Common sense.
Also, please don't lie in your vows. Like, ooh, I understand that people want to have some laughter in the ceremony, and that is totally fine. You do not have to tell any lies to get there. Don't make any promises you don't actually intend to keep for the sake of a laugh.
Yeah.
And I've been at ceremonies where that happened, and lo and behold, all of those couples are divorced now. Funny how that works.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's why, but... And... Also, while we're at it, making a promise and making a declaration of love are two different things. Both of them are good. Both of them can happen at a wedding. in the ceremony. Absolutely. If you want to have a time where the two of you declare your love to each other, that can be great. I've never figured out a good thing to call that in the wedding bulletin. Declarations of love is a perfectly nice way to put it. But if you want to have your chance to say, I've loved you since that first time I saw you at the whatever, sure, by all means. But that's not a promise. Yeah. Making promises to each other are the vows. And that's what those are meant for. And being able to look back and say, yes, I did promise to stand with you during the difficult times in life is important later on. So keep in mind that those are different.
Yeah. I've had people do that and just had like a statement from the couples or something.
Sure.
Like a statement. And those can be lovely. Married. Yeah. And then we do vows. Yeah. And then what usually follows is the symbols of unity.
Yeah. And historically, the obvious choice for that have been the rings. Ta-da. When you get married, many people, not everyone, but many, wear rings. And the ring became a symbol of marriage because a circle does not end. And the hope is that neither does the marriage. But the rings were the first symbol of unity for a marriage. And then we started inventing more. And by me, I mostly mean Hallmark. But
well, one cool thing that I've seen people do with rings is to pass them around the group and have people just like take a moment with them to bless them in their own way or to just like hold them.
The warming of the rings or the blessing of the rings. Yeah. Yes, it can be lovely.
Yeah. I think it's a really beautiful way to involve the community and to like have that support. One of the things made up not by Hallmark, but by a soap opera is the Unity Candle. It is not religious. It is not Christian. It is soap opera, pop culture, terrible theology.
Depending on how you do it.
Depending on how you do it. There are ways to like do a Unity Candle that are not terrible theology. But if anybody blows out their own candle, it's bad theology. When you get married, you are not erasing who you are.
Right.
This is a new thing that you're starting and you're doing it together, but you're not disappearing.
Right.
Also, sometimes the Unity Candle just goes out during the ceremony, and that can have its own meaning, or the candles don't light.
Yeah, please light the candles before the ceremony starts, because that way you'll know it's more likely to light.
Yep. But all of those go into like the idea people have gotten it in their head, and this happens with a lot of wedding stuff where pop culture has become like, this is what a wedding is. And so we assume
tradition.
So we assume that that's how everything is going to be, whether or not it actually makes sense. There are a lot of other really cool and creative things that people can do for symbols of unity. I've seen people who were very bookish and literary and who part of their relationship was like connection over an English class have poems. So they each had a poem that they brought in and then they like did homemade magnet poetry with different words and put words from each of the individual poems together into a new poem. And I thought that was beautiful. It does take a little bit longer than you probably think it does.
Hmm.
There's also like people who combine sand. I've seen this, especially if you're doing a blended family where your kids are involved, to have like the people getting married and the kids involved all be able to put sand together. Just make sure you have like the right size container for it, because if it's too big, it looks weird. And if it's too small, not everybody's sand fits. And that's a whole other thing. And that's part of the like symbols of unity and why Unity candles can be so problematic is they are intended to be symbols. They are intended to make meaning. And people are looking more clearly at that to make meaning because it's not just words and you can't explain it. And so then you get like, if all the sand doesn't fit, that creates a meaning that you don't necessarily want to create.
Yeah, by all means, practice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I've seen like hourglasses with sand where like then theoretically every year you flip it and the two colors of sand blend a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. That is cool in theory, but you have to be like really careful about not shaking it ever. And that's a little more complicated.
Yeah, people move. I've also officiated a couple of services that involved a kit that you can apparently buy online that gives you this wooden cross and three strands of rope, and you braid the three strands of rope and then attach it to the cross, and it's supposed to be a symbol of you and your partner and God all being braided together into one, and there's a Bible verse that talks about the three strands that gets referenced, and this can work just fine. It does not take quite as long as you think it should if you're going to have music behind it while you do it. And also, if you want the pastor to say anything, for the love of everything holy, please have them rewrite the stuff that comes with the kit, because I have been handed some stuff that said some truly horrific things. And so, like, let them write something that is not terrifying, please.
Yeah.
I also once saw a wedding where the folks combined two separate chemicals and then the officiant lit the chemicals on fire because they were only flammable once they were mixed together. And then I think they changed color or something. It was very fun. I have tried to find out what those chemicals are ever since and have never managed it. So if anyone knows, please tell me.
I mean,
because it sounds awesome.
We do have a chart of like what different chemicals burn as different colors, but not what two chemicals only burn when they're combined together. That's really cool. I like that one.
It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also some other practices that incorporate in particular traditions and ancestors and like heritage and culture. And two of the main ones that are kind of most well known and popular are jumping the broom, which is part of African American culture. Mm-hmm. It's also part of Romani culture or Roma culture, which I didn't know until I was looking up information about it. And there are ways to make different meanings from the broom. And there are couples who will pour out libations, particularly, again, African-American couples, who will pour out libations, that there's this honoring of ancestors and culture that happens, but also the different meanings you can create with brooms, of like the handle representing God, the straw bristles, the families, the ribbon binding the couple, those sorts of things that have a lot of different options for how you want to make meaning and are particularly culturally relevant. When we say it's culturally relevant, we are telling especially white people not to do this.
Right.
Just to be perfectly
culturally
clear.
Appropriate.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you want to do a Celtic hand fasting and you're white, I don't think anyone's going to care.
Yeah. Celtic hand fasting is something that I've seen people do and can be this really beautiful way of having a physical binding to represent the symbolic binding of a wedding.
Sure.
Also, in Jewish weddings, there's a tradition of breaking the glass. And so that is less of a symbol of unity, but a big part of what it is a reminder of the fragility of relationships. So it is a reminder to treat the relationship with care.
And that some difficulty will come into every life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's another beautiful practice. Again, if you are not Jewish, it's not the practice for you. There are other ways for you to remember that relationships need care and are fragile.
Sure.
Also, after the promises and the symbols, a lot of times there's a community response. This is also when a lot of people will say, you may kiss. You don't have to kiss if you don't want to. You can do whatever you want, and it can be prompted by the officiant or on your own. But this is a chance for the community to, like, clap and celebrate and cheer and woohoo or whatever they want to do, or have a spoken response to the fact that you are now married.
Also, if you want this, please remember to remind your officiant to put it in the script, because otherwise the officiant might forget. Not that I've ever done that. I'm a professional, but...
No, not at all. Kay did it. She told me. Yes, I have a very detailed script when I'm officiating a wedding. And then the final part is getting out of the space. This can be walking down the aisle. This can be dancing down the aisle. This can be doing acrobatics only if you are trained and have done it already in the clothing that you are wearing for the wedding. But there's lots of different options, so
yeah. And as we talk about these things, you will notice that for many of them, we said, please practice this in advance. And actually, that's a good idea for the whole ceremony, and so many people have a wedding rehearsal, and frankly, I have seen way too many bridal parties not take the rehearsal seriously, when in fact it can be very helpful, and missing the wedding rehearsal can mean that weird and strange things happen. And so I strongly encourage a rehearsal. I strongly encourage taking the rehearsal at least somewhat seriously. And the easiest way to run a rehearsal, if you have someone who hasn't done that before who needs to, the way I was taught is that you start with everybody who's going to be up front at the beginning and you start at the beginning of the ceremony. You run through the ceremony once. Usually you don't have to do it more than once. And then they can practice going out of the space and coming back into the space as many times as they want over and over again until they have it down.
Yep.
With the music and everything.
Yeah. Having that space to have people just like line up how they want to be for the thing and then figure out from there the going in and coming out is brilliant. And that's how I've always done rehearsals as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then we have some more general notes about the ceremony that are not really tied to any one specific thing so much. And my first note for that would be, this is not the time for pranks. Not. N-O-T. Do not do pranks during the ceremony. And please, if you are the folks getting married, and if someone tries to pull a prank during the ceremony, feel free to throw them out of your life so hard that they bounce, maybe a couple of times. This is not the time for pranks.
Also, if you want to pull a, like, surprise musicians playing from the community gathered for the wedding Love Actually scene, you should probably... very minimum, tell the officiant.
Yes, that is what officiants are for.
Yeah. Also, if you are, especially if you're outside or it's warm, make sure you don't lock your knees and you wiggle your toes and have something to drink and something to eat before the wedding. And by something to drink, I mean not alcohol, but probably water or Gatorade.
And a sandwich, like real food.
Yeah.
That will keep you awake and alive and enthusiastic. Yes.
Yep.
Also, the service does not have to be religious. Like, if I'm running it, it will be. But that doesn't mean that your service has to be religious. And your local justice of the peace probably does a lovely job and really enjoys that part of their job, which is probably way more joyful than a lot of the rest of their job. And also, the justice of the peace tends to be affordable. My mom's most recent wedding was one of these, and the justice of the peace did a great job and was having a wonderful time.
Yeah. So. Also, I will say I have done two weddings and been at a bunch of other ones. The two weddings I did, both of them had one person who was more Christian, Lutheran, religious, and one person who was less. And part of what I will say is I'm one of the weird pastors who loves doing weddings because I like making them fit with who the people getting married are.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get that from every pastor or every clergy or every anybody. But if you want that, there are some like really beautiful ways to do that. And I do that in my like premarital stuff that we do where we have a bunch of meetings and we talk about like definite words that you do like to talk about your relationship and definite words that you don't like to talk about your relationship. Those are two things. It is really helpful to have someone, if you want it to be kind of a bigger ceremony and a liturgy and those sorts of things like we're talking about, it is really helpful to have someone who has done it before, who is trained in this. And that doesn't mean that you have to. There are a lot of people who, for a variety of reasons, have a friend or someone who got certified online to be a wedding officiant do their wedding. If that is the route you take, that is great. And it comes with different need, right? My role as a pastor during a wedding is also to help maintain the calm and kind of guide thing and to work with a wedding planner if there is one, but to help people know what they're supposed to do. You probably won't get that if you are having a friend officiate your wedding.
Sure.
And if it's someone who's not trained or doesn't have the experience, they're more likely to get thrown off by small things or big things. So the fewer weddings they've done, the more things count as unexpected, and unexpected things throw people off. So just know that like part of that trade-off is more responsibility goes on other people to make sure that things don't throw people off or that unexpected things are taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even those of us who are a little more structured in how we are used to doing weddings, there is no harm in asking for something for your wedding. I am going to say that all of the weddings that I will do will be religious and faithful in the Christian tradition in some way. But I did do a wedding once where I was specifically asked, we are totally good with talking about God, but one of the people getting married is not explicitly Christian, and so could you not mention Jesus and the Holy Spirit during the ceremony? That was fine. It required some rewriting, but it wasn't a big deal. So if you have an officiant you want to be involved, there is no harm in asking. They might say no, but you can ask.
Yeah. And both of the weddings I was talking about did have conversations around faith and like references right. to God. Some of it was to the divine or to that which is greater than ourselves, right? Like there's different ways of sure. talking about it that has integrity for me as the person officiating and for those people who are getting married and their particular beliefs and values. Yeah.
Also, I'll be entirely honest. We did some research for this, but also a lot of it comes out of our own experience. But I'm not entirely sure. There might be a state or two in the United States of America that still requires the "Does anyone object to this union" line in the ceremony. But honestly, at least most of them don't and haven't.
I think
and have not
do,
had yeah. that line for a long time now. Most ceremonies don't have that line. Mm-hmm. If your officiant tries to include it, it might be because they're not very experienced. And so mostly that part of the tradition is these days taken care of by going to get your license at the county clerk's office. And so you don't have to worry about that at the ceremony. So don't think that that's going to be a moment that brings melodrama into your ceremony because it doesn't have to happen.
Yep.
Unless I missed a state that still requires it, which is possible. So sorry to you guys if that's true.
Yeah, I don't think it is required anymore. But speaking of that, anyone who is being quote unquote given away, that's not required. You don't have to ask who gives this person, and you can ask who supports each of these people. Question, a lot of people have their parent, all of the parents involved, come down with the people getting married. There's just a lot of different options that take away the like possession aspect of weddings.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing to take away. Like we don't need to possess people. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's bad. Absolutely. Along with murder. Murder also bad.
Murder
but,
bad.
You know, you've heard
possessing
that from us before.
People bad. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you have people walking down the aisle together and you want one of them to offer their arm to the other, the easiest way to do that is have the person make their hand nice and flat, and then they put the tip of their middle finger on their belly button, and they point their elbow at the person they're offering their arm to. It's very simple. It's very fast. And it makes a lot of people less nervous about that part of the ceremony. I always teach that during my rehearsals because a lot of people don't really have a frame of reference for offering their arm.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love the combo that we have, Kay, of you being like, here's in the realm of like traditional things and quote unquote proper things. And then I'm like, yes. And also here's all the ways that you can do something completely different.
Oh, and we haven't even gotten to my suggested list of internet links on how you can make your wedding more you and more unusual, which I have a variety of, but we'll get to those later.
Yeah. Also, if you are having an animal do anything.
Oh, gracious. Yeah.
Don't give them rings or valuable things.
No.
Same goes with kids. If you absolutely must have them carry the rings or whatever, don't give it to them until they are about to go down the aisle, and then get it from them immediately. Also, what I offer to people is I am happy to hold the rings so that nobody else has to worry about that.
Especially right? not the best man who might try to pull a prank.
Yeah, especially
if you're worried.
Especially not any of the wedding party, especially not kids, especially not animals.
Yes. And it can also be very easily managed to have a child or animal look like they are carrying mm-hmm. the rings, but actually they're carrying fake ones.
Yeah.
And then someone does a little sleight of hand at the front, and lo and behold, and suddenly the real rings are there.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
So many options that don't risk things coming out through...
Or getting swallowed.
The poop later. Yep.
Yep.
That.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we spent plenty of time talking about the ceremony, which honestly is probably going to be the shortest part of your day when you're getting married. And so let's talk about the reception and party afterwards. Now, personally speaking, when I got married 11 years ago, I did not want to have alcohol at my wedding reception because I knew that it would lead to bad things. And so I asked myself, how can we get around having alcohol? And the easiest way for us was we were getting married at a church, and we said we were having the reception at the church to save money, which was true. Like, that was one of the reasons, sure. And also, by the way, since we're having the reception at the church, we totally can't have alcohol, which was actually true for that church.
It's not true for every church, but
most churches will be happy to say, oh no, you totally can't have alcohol at your wedding if you're having your reception here. Officially speaking, we're not letting you. Yeah. We'll be the bad guy, even if they would theoretically allow it. But what that does mean is that folks may briefly disappear out of your reception to go down the street to the local bar, get a couple of drinks there, and then come back. That can work just fine, as long as, you know, folks don't disappear for too long or get lost.
Yeah. Also, there is no wedding fashion or trend that will last forever.
No.
So make sure that you're prioritizing the things that you care about, which are the people who are coming. So make sure that you're thinking about food allergies and dietary restrictions, about bathroom and other accessibility needs, about childcare, and if you want kids at the wedding or not. There are so many different definitions of tacky or cringe or whatever, but accessibility is not tacky or cringe. It's faithful and good.
Yeah. Also, giving anyone who has been drinking already for a while a microphone is frankly a dangerous proposition. Yep. Anything can happen and might. And so if there are going to be speeches and or toasts, do them early and do them fast. And by the way, no one minds a speech or a toast that is on the short side. Everyone is in favor of that. I have had to convince a few folks of that, and then they found out that they were everybody's favorite because they were very short.
Yeah. And also, not everybody needs to give a toast. I have been in situations where both the people of honor and the family give a toast. I've been in situations where it's just the family, where it's just one person. Like, you don't need a bunch of toasts. And that keeps you from having the unknown happen when it comes to the toast.
Or just that part dragging on for a while.
Yeah.
Also, don't force people to make toasts who don't want to. My dad gave me the very specific instruction that no, he was not doing a speech. And that was fine.
Yeah. And if people really want to give toasts, that might be a good, like, at the rehearsal dinner, people can say their thing, you know, before the karaoke starts. Whatever a rehearsal dinner looks like for you.
Yeah.
Also, make sure that you, as a person getting married, have someone who will make sure that you get fed. Ideally, every person who is actually doing the getting married part would have someone like this. If you're doing buffet as part of the reception, then just make sure that everybody knows the people getting married go first. Because otherwise, you are likely to not get any food because you're talking to everybody. Another way that I kind of make sure people have space is greet everyone as they come in for the reception or as they leave from the ceremony, and then you've greeted everyone and you don't have to worry about making sure you hit everybody.
Yeah.
So that's part of my, like, here's how to make sure you do the things. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of things that can happen at weddings, let's talk about general family and loved ones wedding-related melodrama, which, let's be honest, we all are going to have at least a little bit of that. So, a few random points in no particular order. A, having a responsible someone to keep an eye on that problematic person who absolutely has to be there is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And having someone who knows that that's their job and they are there to, like, run interference can be super helpful, as long as you pick that person carefully. But also, it works a lot better if the problematic person never knows that anyone was specifically keeping an eye on them, mm-hmm. ever, including after the wedding, including years down the line.
Yep. Also,
that can get interesting.
I think there's also something to be said for just because you think you have to invite someone doesn't mean you do. A lot of the time there is pressure from family to have certain things in the wedding or invite certain people. And ultimately, the people getting married are the ones who are making the decisions about what is best for them. And they, like, there is some balancing in navigating, like, family pressure versus other stuff.
Diplomacy, yay.
But you don't always have to have problematic people.
Right. And I have a internet link that will help you with figuring those things out later. Yeah.
Especially because we're in an ongoing pandemic, it is a lot easier to say, we just need to keep it small because we have people who are immunocompromised, which you probably do, because you probably have at least one person who's coming who has had COVID, and that means they're now immunocompromised. So that can help.
It handily cuts down on your budget, mm-hmm. which is great.
It's true. It's true.
Also, people have different approaches to this, but the people who are in your wedding or the people who are at your wedding that day are probably people that matter to you on mm-hmm. that day. And that's great. And it can be wonderful. Years from now, as you look at your wedding photos, if you have those, the people who matter to you or the people who you matter to may change and be different. And suddenly your brother's ex-boyfriend is in the photos and you have not seen that guy in 25 years. Or you see the person who was one of your bridesmaids and you haven't spoken to them in a while. Or someone died. Or things change. That's mm-hmm. normal. Don't expect that everyone who is in or at your wedding will be a part of your life forever. It may be a little difficult to look back at those photos later. That's a thing that happens. That's normal. That's not something to be ashamed of.
It's okay, and it's real, and that's, you know, a good reason to make sure you have at least one picture that is literally the people getting married and nobody else. Like,
yeah,
have that space.
Absolutely.
And it's a beautiful thing. I know I have pictures from my cousin's wedding where, like, her mom died before her first kid was born, and her mom was at the wedding. And so, like, there are other kinds of, like, people who won't be with you where, like, you look back and you're like, wow, I'm really grateful that they were there. Even if yeah. it still brings emotion and sadness and grief.
Yeah. And finally, many of us have heard what are generally called bridezilla stories. A lot of those are usually way more extraordinary than the vast majority of people we know.
Mm-hmm.
But the folks getting married certainly can make reasonable requests of their bridal party on the day of the wedding, and we'll talk about what some of those options are. But you don't get to demand that people change who they are on the day of your wedding.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you don't get to say that you have to pretend to be straight. No, you don't get to say that you have to lose 30 pounds. No, you don't get to say that you have to
chop off your waist-length hair
and dye it blue or whatever. No, your wedding is not the center of other people's lives. It is only the center of your life.
Yeah. If you want people to wear particular clothing or styles, tell them explicitly. Also, if you don't care, that's fine, but people still want to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, okay, this may come as a shock to you, but your wedding is probably not going to fix any relationships that are currently in shambles. Just like kids don't fix relationships.
Yeah, no.
Sorry. Actually, not.
Also?
I won't say that. I'm not sorry.
yeah, no. Also, some people may try to take your wedding and turn it into an opportunity to fix other relationships in their lives. It's not necessarily going to work. And also, that's not what your wedding is for. You don't have to let them do that.
Yeah, and you don't have to do that, Emily Gilmore. Also,
yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't help it. It just
we'll
so
get
well.
Into pop culture, but yes.
In fact, a lot of pastors I know don't actually like weddings as much because they tend to mm-hmm. exacerbate conflict. So that's just also something to think about is, okay, if this is going to exacerbate conflict, how do we, like, proactively set it up so that, you know, the two conflicty people or whatever are not sitting at the same table?
Yeah, absolutely. And then not all wedding trends are actually bad. And one good and useful one that I truly wish had been a thing when I got married is the idea of people in the wedding party, often specifically the maid of honor and or the best man, having emergency kits can be super helpful. These emergency kits might include things that involve stain removal, a small sewing kit, a small first aid kit, various other useful things. Ibuprofen or Tylenol can be super helpful. There are whole lists of suggestions of what to include in these emergency kits online, and you may not need all or any of them, but boy howdy, if it turns out you do need one of them, and I am speaking from experience, thank God someone put that together. I personally was deeply grateful that my grandmother happened to have a stain removal stick in her purse at my wedding, because that came in clutch. Mm-hmm. So,
and I have been really bummed that there was no small sewing kit at weddings I've been to. So, like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Also, some stuff that clergy and officiants probably want you to know that sometimes are, like, more complicated to talk about directly.
Yes.
The first is, when signing a legal document, the people signing have to be sober. People making legal promises and vows also need to be sober.
Mm-hmm.
that means not drinking beforehand.
Or engaging in other recreational intoxications.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. Also, some places don't require signatures from the people getting married because they've done the process to get the license. I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. Also, if you want pictures of the officiant signing the marriage certificate or something, you should tell them because I maybe didn't know and almost like signed without any pictures.
Although, to be fair, making it look like you're signing is pretty easy, even if you already have signed.
But, it's true. It's true. Yeah. Also, there are certain legal requirements that vary a lot by state. So in some states, performing something that looks like a wedding but isn't legally binding. So for folks who are doing commitment ceremonies or something because they cannot legally get married without, for example, losing their benefits if they're on disability benefits, can get officiants accused of or indicted on fraud charges. So if that is what is happening, just like make sure that there's clarity about whether or not the thing is legal so that we don't become frauds.
That would be great. Also, usually there is a way to do a commitment ceremony that isn't legally binding. There are just requirements for what that has to look like or what it has to include or not include. So if you let the officiant know, they can usually figure that out.
Yeah.
Also, and I have never successfully had this conversation as an officiant. I have tried a couple of times. It just never really went where I needed it to go because it's kind of awkward. But if clergy in particular are involved as your officiant, you can choose one of two types of relationships to have with them. You can treat them as just another vendor of your wedding, just like the person providing your cake and the person who's providing your flowers. And that means one type of relationship, in which case you don't really get to expect a lot of pastoral care from them before or after the ceremony. Like, there might be an emergency, and we understand that, but otherwise you're not putting a priority on that special relationship. But the other option is you do all have a special relationship, or one of the persons getting married has a special relationship with that clergy person, in which case, please treat them with a little more care and thoughtfulness and respect than your other vendors. And when you phrase things to them, keep that in mind. And in both cases, in all cases, please pay them real money for performing your ceremony. Like, that takes a lot of preparation and work and effort. And acknowledging that through money is necessary in the capitalist landscape that we live in.
Yes. Also, all of your vendors you should treat with care.
Oh, absolutely. And respect. Yes.
For the record, we want them all to be respected and cared for. One of the things that I talk about, and something to keep in mind when thinking about like rates and what you might pay clergy, a lot of clergy wedding rates are actually like lower than they should be. So if I'm in a congregation and the congregation has set rates, then I will say what those set rates are. And I will say, think about what this means and what this value is for this. I do the premarital, like building the liturgy and all of that stuff. So it's a pretty involved thing, more so even than other ways of doing it, especially if you're getting premarital somewhere else. But to recognize that if they're clergy, we literally have graduate degrees to do this work. We have studied, we have practiced, we have done a lot to do this work. And so thinking about like what you're paying the other vendors, what you're paying the musicians, what you're paying all of those things, and then think about what feels just and generous to pay the clergy or the officiant who is doing the wedding.
Yeah.
There's some risk in like having it open-ended like that, but I think in my experience it's been a lot more helpful because everybody has different like amounts of money that they can spend on different things. And so giving that space to say like, this should be a meaningful amount because it's a meaningful thing that we are doing together. Yeah, is important. Right.
Yeah, officiating a wedding for $200 when you know that they're spending $12,000 on the flowers feels a little weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, I have two more things. One is, and I tell this especially to queer people, but it is true for everyone. There is almost nothing about weddings and getting married that is required. And when I say that, I mean, if you are feeling pressure to invite X number of people, to have it be this type of wedding, to spend this much money on this thing, to have it be catered and not potluck, to have it be at this time, whatever the case may be, to have it be in a church, because if it's not in a church, everybody's going to be heathens.
Not true.
It's not true. You don't have to. And there is so much meaning and joy and liberation that can come from choosing what you want instead of just assuming you have to do the things that have always been done.
Amen. Also, I totally had a conversation with my husband last night about how we were doing this deep dive today, and he says that his biggest piece of advice is to elope. And for the record, I tried to talk him into eloping 11 years ago, and he's the one who insisted on the public ceremony. So he acknowledges that I was right.
That's for fantastic. The record. Nice. Also, on that note, there is no such thing as a perfect day. Every wedding will have something that goes wrong. Just know that. Something will go wrong on your wedding day. And ultimately, as long as, at the end of the day, the people getting married, if it's a legal wedding, are legally married, or if it's not a legal wedding, are committed to each other, and nobody ends up hospitalized, dead, or in jail, it's a good wedding. It might still be a good wedding if people end up in jail, but that's a different kind of conversation. The goal is to get married so that then you can be married and live life married together. As long as that happens, it's a success.
Yeah. So I have some suggested wedding links, which we can include in the episode description. So I used the first two websites that I'm suggesting to you 11 years ago to plan my own wedding, and I have skimmed those occasionally since, although I haven't kept a very close eye on them. And then the last website I read regularly because it is a favorite to this day, because it's not solely focused on weddings. So the first two websites are solely focused on weddings. One is called A Practical Wedding, creatively enough. They used to just be a very practical real-life advice blog for weddings on how to do things, such as, you know, one of my parents is dead and now there's a step-parent involved, and how do I include them in the ceremony without offending anyone or forgetting my dead parent? Stuff like that. 15 years ago, that was actually, like, difficult to talk about. And for some folks, it still is. And so it has a lot of real-life advice. But also now they've expanded to include all kinds of extra tools and resources on their website that may be helpful to you. Yeah.
Also, those questions, officiants can help with some of those questions too.
Experienced ones can, yes. Also, there's a website called Offbeat Wed, which used to be called Offbeat Bride. And they specialize in if there is something that is so-called out of the ordinary or not the classic traditional thing for weddings about your wedding, they almost certainly have an article or six on it. And they have also expanded their website quite a bit since back in the day when I was looking at it. And so if you want to wear an unusual colored dress, or if you want to do something unusual during the ceremony, or if you want to include something at your reception, they almost certainly have an article on it. It is very expansive these days, so that can be helpful. And then finally, the last website that which you have probably heard me talk about on the podcast before is called Captain Awkward, who runs an advice blog that is particularly great about talking about boundaries, both maintaining and creating them. And we will include a link specifically to the wedding-related letters. Those are useful both to those who are planning a wedding and those who are attending weddings. And there are lots of very real-life advice included in those letters, and I really treasure Captain Awkward as a reminder that real life does not have to be as difficult as we sometimes try to convince ourselves it is.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
And what would a deep dive into weddings be if not for pop culture?
Yes. This one got kind of extensive.
It's true. It's true. First up is Four Weddings and a Funeral. If that's not about weddings, then I don't know what is. Also, as we've been holding off on posting our movie commentary for our Patreon supporters until the WGA and SAG after strikes are over, because we don't want to support struck companies. And so as the WGA strike is over, woohoo, yay writers who won, and the SAG AFTRA and IATSE strikes are looking like they will, well, IATSE hasn't started striking, but is not for struck. It's not the same. That's mostly video games. But the SAG AFTRA strike looks like they are making real progress in negotiations. And so we are going to hopefully be releasing this movie commentary soon. Maybe this week. Hopefully at least this month. Yeah. It's super exciting. So Four Weddings and a Funeral is, it was made back in the day. So there's some queer codedness that's not as explicit as it could be.
Right.
But yeah, definitely check out our movie commentary for our deeper thoughts on the weddings and the funerals.
Yeah, and we are not doing all of these pop culture references in exact chronological order, but our first few do have to do with 90s weirdness, as I tend to think of it, because the 1990s were a very strange time. So one maybe unexpected movie recommendation I have for you is a movie called Oscar, which is set in the 1930s, but it was made in the 90s. It is a gangster comedy movie, and it stars Sylvester Stallone. No, I'm not kidding. He is hilarious. And the whole point of this movie is that he is the gangster and his daughter is trying to get married. It is a screwball comedy. It is fabulous. And who knew that Sylvester Stallone could do comedy? But also there are a ton and a half of really talented actors and actresses in this movie. And it is way more fun than it has any right to be. So I love to recommend this movie to people because it surprises the heck out of so many. And rightfully so.
Yeah. That's awesome. Also, as we've been going through, I just keep thinking of more and more movies, right? Because like,
yes.
on this, the day of my daughter's wedding. I know that was a terrible accent, but I don't know how to do a Godfather's accent, right? But there's so much pop culture around weddings. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so much. Speaking of which, one of the first things that popped into my head when we started thinking about pop culture and weddings is a two-part episode from the TV show Mad About You. In the middle of season 3 in 1995, they did this two-part episode which flashed back to Paul and Jamie's wedding and the wackiness thereof, planning and executing it, with the ultimate realization that their ceremony actually was not legal and they had to do it all over again. Because they did not understand which wedding license was the legal one. It's a long story. But I loved that show. They were a very sweet couple to me growing up. And I'm sure you can probably find that on streaming somewhere. I hope so. And it was a good time.
Also, my best friend's wedding is a great way to remind yourself that therapy is good and getting to know yourself and your heart and who you love and in what ways you love is really important. And if you are attracted to somebody who's your friend, maybe think about telling them before they're getting engaged and married.
Yeah. And if they are getting engaged and married, maybe don't. Like, yeah. Maybe it's not about you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have not actually seen that movie, but my mom loves it. And then the last movie in our 1990s weirdness series from the pop culture section is a movie called In and Out, which is not super talked about today, but I have vivid memories of growing up with this movie. It stars Kevin Kline and Tom Selleck. Kevin Kline is getting married. Only one of his former students, because he's a high school English teacher, has gone on to become a famous actor. And at the Academy Awards, in his speech, he gives his former English teacher, Kevin Kline, a shout out and says, "And he's gay." And Kevin Kline is getting married in a week. And so Tom Selleck, as a out gay journalist in the 90s, comes to the wedding to cover the wedding as a journalist. And Kevin Kline is convinced, of course I'm getting married, of course I'm straight, of course I'm attracted to my wife, and wackiness ensues. And Joan Cusack is playing the woman he's getting married to. Mm-hmm. And so I have not seen this movie in at least 20 years. I'm sure that there are missteps and mistakes made, but also, like, they were trying to portray gay people as normal in the 90s, and that was not something that happened a lot. So yeah. I want to give them credit for trying, and also, like, Kevin Kline and Tom Selleck are hilarious. And it is, in many ways, just a very fun movie about a wedding.
Yeah.
So.
Also, a wonderful Star Wars wedding, because, you know, the horror nerds at church is doing Star Wars soon. Padme and Anakin. And this is one of the ones that's a little more complicated, because part of what goes into a wedding is the communal aspect and community support. That's part of, like, having witnesses. And they definitely do it in secret and then keep that secret for as long as they possibly can in ways that cause immense amounts of harm and eventually, thanks Anakin, death. So, you know, maybe think about what it means to keep a secret if that's what you're trying to do. There's a difference between eloping and keeping a secret.
Yeah. Another movie that popped into my head while thinking about this was the movie Ever After, because not so much the idea that they get married at the end, but rather there is a wedding that almost happens in the middle where the prince is going to marry a Spanish princess, and she comes down the aisle just sobbing her eyes out. She is so sad that she is getting married to this guy. It is a remarkable scene, and he winds up canceling the wedding as soon as she gets up to the front because he cannot go through with it. He bursts into laughter. It's pretty fabulous. And that's just what I think of in terms of, you know, sometimes you should not go through with the wedding. And mm-hmm. if the person you're going to get married to comes down the aisle and is sobbing their eyes out, that's probably a sign. Just saying.
Yeah. Also, Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girls has a bunch of different weddings. Some of them are elopements in France. Some of them are a lot of, like, proposals and broken proposals and engagements and broken engagements. And Emily Gilmore and Richard Gilmore's famous wedding renewal scheme to get Lorelai back together with Christopher. So many possibilities. Yeah.
A thousand yellow daisies.
A thousand yellow daisies. Yeah, there's just so many weddings. I didn't read... It wasn't until we started thinking about it that I realized how many weddings are in the Gilmore Girls series. My favorite is the denied proposal of Rory and Logan. So that's my favorite one. Because it's a like, no, and then she's single and about to start an adventure for the end of the series. It is literally the best series finale of any show I've ever had, especially for its time.
Yeah. And then there's the movie Sweet Home Alabama, starring Reese Witherspoon and Matthew McConaughey. And I like this movie because it's a great examination of how more than one relationship can be a good relationship. And what goes into a good relationship can really change as your life changes and what you need can change. And I suppose if you want to take the long-term message that when in doubt, you should stay married to Matthew McConaughey, you can take that as the message of the movie, but you don't have to. But I really like how many different people come together as supporting the couple, although the couple changes as the movie goes along. And you can have different relationships that are still good.
Yeah. Also, Mona Lisa Smile is a great example of, it's a bit of a historical fiction thing, but it does a great job of kind of teasing out different approaches to weddings and futures and life and why people might want or not want to get married.
Yeah. Absolutely. Also, the word disrespect was not actually a thing in the 50s, but that's a different conversation. I just get a little obsessed about how it was very much the 2000s trying to do the 50s and failing. But the costumes were actually pretty good.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And Love Actually is one of the famous ones with weddings and the big fancy wedding and the wedding surprises that are delightful, but also because the guy is in love with your fiance, then spouse.
Weird.
Yeah. If you are in love with someone and they marry someone else, maybe keep it to yourself.
Don't tell them.
And take, like,
don't be weird.
Do your own internal work instead of, like, telling them on Christmas Eve. Christmas is not exactly about truth and telling the truth and love. Like, Christmas is about God being like, hey, let's hang out.
And the wise men carefully lying to Herod to save baby Jesus' life. You know, lots of things.
Yeah, there's, like, evasiveness and lies, all sorts of things. It's true.
Awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, who can forget Donna Noble appearing on the TARDIS in her wedding dress all of a sudden in that episode of Doctor Who where she's introduced in the special. And that is certainly not a lesson in how to do a wedding, although it does provide the very useful piece of information that if you are one of the people getting married and something goes wrong and you don't know how to explain or handle it, burst into tears. And probably everything will fix itself because people hate seeing someone who's supposed to be getting married burst into tears. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Donna.
Which is a much better wedding thing than Amy Pond, who just had to remember really hard for her wedding to save the day.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to include a couple of somewhat oddball movies that you may not have seen, which I saw on Netflix a while back. One is called Arranged. It's from 2007, and it's set in the modern day. And it's a film about two women who meet at work and become friends in New York City. And then each of them enter into arranged marriages. And I'm putting the word arranged in quotes because while their process has a structure to it and their families are involved, they very clearly both are enthusiastically in favor of going through with these weddings. One of them is an Orthodox Jewish woman and the other one is a Muslim woman, and there's a happy ending. It's a very sweet movie overall. I enjoyed it, and it's an interesting examination of different cultures that is, I think, fairly accurate. And then another movie is called The Wedding Song. This one is a movie made in 2011. It's a foreign film about two young women in 1940s Tunisia. One of them is Jewish and one of them is Muslim, and they are best friends. And they are both getting married as World War II gets more serious. This movie is interesting. It doesn't have an exactly happy ending, and it's generally an uncomfortable movie to watch because of the war going on and also all of the various prejudices involved in the culture at the time. But it is an interesting examination of different people's approaches to weddings and marriage and why.
But if you want something that's just, like, terrible, Twilight is a movie where there's a wedding of vampires and humans, and also there's one point where literally, like, the community that is there to support them, like, disappear in the video thing. Yeah. If you want an alternative perspective to the perspective Twilight gives, Pace and I did an episode on that movie for Horror Nerds at Church, so we will link to that for you, just to make sure you get, yeah, that space.
Yeah. Also, I am on record as deeply loving the movie Jupiter Ascending, which was fabulous for so many reasons, but also does include a wedding scene where the wedding is explicitly happening for legal reasons, and then it turns out that she does not fully understand those legal reasons, and wow, that leads to some problems. Also, it has one of the best wedding dresses I've ever seen in it. Wedding outfits, really. She's also wearing this truly incredible, like, crown-like tiara thing. And I just think that they did a fabulous job, and also that movie is just underappreciated compared to what it should be.
So. Yeah. Also, okay, Sense8, the series finale for Sense8, which is in the 20-teens, is really a beautiful... Sense8 as a series is a little bit trippy and ultimately delightful, but there's some brilliant stuff that they did, particularly, like, for the time period, which, admittedly, only 5 years ago, and yet to have Nomi, a white trans woman, and Amanita, a black cis woman, get married is, like, really this beautiful, like, pushing boundaries. And the show as a whole is a really diverse cast. There's a lot of, like, sex and relationship-y things that are kind of trippy for some people, but yeah, I really liked it. And the two shows that are not the only two shows, but are, like, particular examples of complex life and culture around wedding in pop culture. There are so many, like, reality TV shows around weddings, from Bachelor and The Golden Bachelor to Love is Blind, which has an ableist title and is really complicated because it's premised on the connections you make with a person while you can't see them, you can just hear them, and then what happens when you're in person. Or The Ultimatum, where you've been in a relationship with somebody and one person wants to get married and another person does not want to get married, and they give an ultimatum and they come, and then they, like, have a fake marriage with someone else and then go back and have that marriage life and then decide if they want to get married. It's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's some of the trash TV that gets played that I get reeled into in house because I can't help it.
Brain candy is not a bad thing.
Yeah. So, and there's a ton more. We'd love to know what your favorite, either favorite love or favorite to hate, pop culture wedding stuff is.
Absolutely.
But also, like, a note, we would be remiss if we didn't name very clearly and explicitly that weddings are complicated. Not everybody historically has had access to weddings and the rights and protections that they entail, and not everybody does today. There are a lot of people who have very complicated relationships to a wedding or legal marriage. Don't pressure people to do it, and if you are feeling pressured to do it, it's okay to push back and to tell people not. Also, we don't have marriage equality in this country because people who are on disability benefits largely lose their benefits if they get married.
As do elderly folks who are on Social Security.
Yep. Yeah. It's Social Security, and they stop receiving money that they need to survive. So.
Oh, a death benefit.
Yeah, death benefits. So there's a lot of complicated things, and we are still working for that. But weddings are complicated. The legal aspect can provide enormous rights and benefits, but not everybody has access to that. People in polyamorous relationships don't have access to that. It's really complicated to figure out how to provide those protections without the automatic hundreds of rights and protections that come by signing a wedding. So,
yeah. But should you ever have a wedding, we hope that it is a wonderful and happy and joyful day that is about the love that you have for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless you.
And the love of God and the community that you're in.
Yeah.
Are you curious about how the Twilight Saga is influenced by Mormon theology?
Or why so many vampires are queer-coded?
Have you sat up at night pondering if the documentary Jesus Camp counts as a horror film?
Or have you ever wondered which slasher icon is which member of the Trinity?
Do you ever get into debates about whether the movies Casper, Ghost, and Candyman can be part of the Ghostbusters expanded universe?
Have you watched most of the Nightmare on Elm Street series before the age of 10?
What? Who does that?
Okay, maybe that one's just me. But if you answered yes to any of the other questions, then we've got the podcast for you.
And if you answered yes to Pace's question.
That too. I'm Pace, and I am the super nerdy horror person who's been a horror fan since well before the age when it was appropriate to watch these movies.
And I'm Pastor Emily, and I am the inevitable queer coding somewhere in every horror movie. And we are the hosts of Horror Nerds at Church, a ridiculously queer podcast hosted by two non-binary trans nerds.
Each season, we follow a horror franchise and a host of other horror and horror-adjacent movies to talk about how they connect to queerness, religion, and theology.
We feature bona fide scary movies like Halloween, The Witch, Candyman, A Nightmare on Elm Street, and Suspiria.
We also have non-scary movies or low-stake horror movies like Ghostbusters, The Addams Family, Doctor Strange, and Hocus Pocus.
Our upcoming season, we are covering a galaxy far, far away by looking at the Star Wars and Alien franchises from queer, religious, and horror points of view.
So whether you're a lifelong horror master like me,
or a horror Padawan like me,
we have a place for you at Horror Nerds at Church.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you catch your podcasts. Our first reading for this episode is Isaiah chapter 25, verses 1 through 9. The prophet praises God for sustaining and protecting the people. One of the themes in here is the ways that destruction brings life. So there is this praise for God for sustaining and protecting the people, but also this like extolling of the destruction of cities. And whenever I think of destruction that also brings life, I think of fires. And you can definitely check out our fire episode, which we'll link to, but for me, the image is always from the hikes that I took at camp after fires had been going through. Fires are very common in Colorado these days, but there's always like the black charred remains of trees and stuff, but then there's also like the green shoots that are coming out and the life that is like starting to peek out from the newly re-enriched soil
and
all of
it. Yeah. And then as we jump into the verses, in verse 2 we read, "For you have made the city a heap, the fortified city a ruin. The palace of aliens is a city no more, and it will never be rebuilt." And I realize that the palace of aliens in this verse is referring to a foreign country's palace on Earth, but wouldn't it be so much more interesting if the aliens involved were from another planet? God gets involved in an intergalactic conflict, for example. But remember, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, taught us that God does not need a starship.
I love you, Kay. And then in verse 6 we read, "On this mountain, the everlasting of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-matured wine, of rich food filled with marrow, of well-matured wine strained clear." Now, thanks to last week's episode on vineyards, we know how to make wine. Hopefully, God is not making wine like Lucille Ball in I Love Lucy, because I don't want that. No, thank you.
I think if God was doing the stomping, it would be more hygienic.
I mean, more hygienic is not the same thing as hygienic.
And then in verse 7, we read, "And God will destroy on this mountain the shroud that is cast over all peoples, the sheet that is spread over all nations. God will swallow up death forever." And both this verse and the one before it that Emily read reminded me of the city in the Himalayan mountains referred to as Afterlife in the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was a safe place for Inhumans, as they were called in the show, to stay. And it is a place of refuge and also plenty for them.
I did not watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's one of the Marvels that I did not get into.
I saw the first few seasons. It was very fun. And then it got progressively weirder, but that happens.
That happens, yeah. And then in verse 8, we read, God will swallow up death forever. Then the everlasting God will wipe away the tears from all faces, and the disgrace of their people God will take away from all the earth, for the everlasting has spoken. And the thing that comes to mind for me, and this is probably because of our Horror Nerds at Church from a Certain Point of View book club, which does like the Star Wars A New Hope from like the side characters' perspectives, is the destruction of Alderaan by the Death Star and the tears of Leia, of the rebellion, and of Leia's parents, the Organas, who are on the planet as they realize what's happening. And just that, like, that depth of grief at that expansiveness of death.
Yeah. Our second reading for this episode is from Philippians chapter 4, verses 1 through 9. Paul encourages us to be of one mind and to be gentle and peaceful with one another.
So one of the themes in this passage is the idea of practicing joy. Paul is like, rejoice always, right? Which is like, Paul, really?
But well, also, a lot.
Yeah. But also he's like writing from jail. So he might have a good perspective on this. But I was like, oh, it's like a little Orphan Annie. The sun will come out tomorrow. Every cloud has a silver lining. Like, that girl, if anybody practices joy, it is Little Orphan Annie, for sure. And then in verse 2, we read, I urge Euodia and I urge Syntyche to be of the same mind in the Lord. And there's, like, apparently conflict, whatever. And the next verse goes on to name one more person and then everybody else. And I just love this, like, naming of women in particular and explicitly, and then having the men be like, and everybody else. It is a reminder to me of like when one of my majors was women in gender studies and men thought gender studies didn't include them, right? And that's the privileged group thinks that they're not included by the category.
Yeah.
Also of our like proposed game of biblical clue and men's biblical clue, you know.
Yes.
So many options.
Mentioned in a previous episode.
Yes. Yeah.
And then in verse 5, we read, let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. And honestly, gentleness is a good quality to keep in mind while wedding planning, speaking of our deep dive today. What arrangements will allow those who are present to be gentle with one another is a good question to be asked. And imagine how many of our pop culture references in the deep dive would have gone better or differently or even, you know, just led to a legally binding wedding if those weddings had been designed with that priority in mind.
I mean, that would have been a different story. Yeah.
In many cases. Yes.
Yep. And then verse 7, we read, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And whenever I read this verse now, I think of the Helen Keller quote in which she says, I do not want the peace which passeth understanding. I want the understanding which bringeth peace, which I love. I love that, like, no, there. It needs work. Like, you have to work to understand. Yeah. But also, I think about this particular part and what Paul is saying, and it seems a lot like the piece of the SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee's nonviolence in the face of violence when working to desegregate cafeteria counters and stuff. And
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that takes a piece that definitely surpasses all understanding to be able to sit there while people yell at you and throw things at you.
Yeah. And then in verse 8, we read, finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And so when we talk about whatever is pure, instead of that referring to purity culture, when we talk about whatever is pure, let's think about weddings are also a good time to focus on the priorities that you're sure about, the priorities that are pure, you might say, that are very clear and obvious and straightforward to you. So does grandma, for example, absolutely have to be there for your wedding? Okay, then maybe give up the venue that is an hour's hike from the nearest highway. For example, like, let's focus on what few clear, pure things are really actually important to you, and the rest will fall into place.
Yeah. And I think that's what can get lost in the culture we have built up around weddings, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our gospel reading for today is Matthew chapter 22, verses 1 through 14. Jesus tells the crowd the troubling parable of the wedding banquet. So one of the themes in this is this idea of retribution. And one thing that is important to note is this passage follows immediately after last week's passage where the people Jesus was talking to were like, oh, the vineyard owner is going to come and destroy them all. And so Jesus takes that logic of how the world works to compare to the reign of God. And so it's this retributive thing of like, nobody shows up for the prince's royal wedding and the king destroys everybody. And it feels a lot like the making of a villain. Like, they weren't bad and then they were scorned and people like dismissed them or whatever. And then they were like, I'm gonna get back at you. And the retribution frequently like way outpaces the harm done originally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then in verse 3, we read, the king sent his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding banquet, but they would not come. Which raises the question, like, is this rebellion? I mean, it's nonviolent, right, at first. And then it gets more open and violent uprising. Kind of like Hamilton, right? Dear king, we quit you. Peace becomes the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
You know, just a little. But yeah, I didn't realize until like today that this was the king's wedding. And that puts a whole new thing on refusing to come to a wedding.
Yeah. And then in verse 6, we read, while the rest seized his slaves, mistreated them, and killed them. This is an extraordinary reaction to literally any wedding invite. Like, I have watched both a lot of wedding movies and a lot of action movies, and receiving a wedding invite is not generally when one of those types of movies turns into the other type. I'm just saying.
True.
I am, however, kind of wondering if that B-movie exists somewhere, and if you know of one, please let me know. Like, I'm thinking, our hero, Dave Big Biceps, gets an invite to his ex's wedding and decides to blow it up literally. Like, really? That sounds like it could be fun. I'm thinking probably 1980s rather than 1990s, but you never know. The 1990s were a weird time, as we have already discussed.
It's true. So, it's true.
Yeah. And then in verse 8, we read, then the king said to his slaves, the wedding is ready, but those invited were not worthy. And this is the one moment in really this entire story that actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because I wouldn't want these people at my wedding either if they had murdered random wedding invitation messengers. Like, what could happen if they actually show up at the wedding? That seems reasonable to me. I did not watch Game of Thrones, but I've heard about it, and I don't really want to know the details. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yep. And then in verse 12, we read, and the king said to the person, friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe? And the person was speechless. This is like always my fear for weddings. Like, what do you even wear to a wedding? Thankfully, I now usually officiate them. So we talk about that explicitly before the wedding and I go through, do you want me to wear a nalb? Do you want me to wear like this stole? Like, let's talk about the option, which is much better for me, but not everybody has that option. My favorite way of telling people, like, here's an idea of what to wear is having a place on your wedding website or wherever that says, if we were coming to our own wedding as guests, this is what we would wear. That has been the most helpful, especially as a non-binary person, because then I can look at each gender. If you're all the same gender, it's a little more complicated, but
sure,
yeah, just a tip, extra tips at the end.
And now for our most dearly belovedest segment. Let's make a Muppets musical. So, Emily, who would you cast in our readings for this week?
Honestly, Miss Piggy is the king or the prince and is pissed then nobody's coming to her wedding. I can't help it.
Absolutely. You know, I realized that when we watch Muppet stuff, usually Miss Piggy is the bride, right? Because it's, if we're talking about a wedding for the Muppets, it's usually Kermit and Miss Piggy. But I also was caught by the idea that wouldn't Miss Piggy be the ultimate maid of honor? Like, I would absolutely want her backing me up on my wedding day. She would not only have absolutely every emergency prepared for, because she has been through so many of them herself, but also she would absolutely make sure that everyone was following instructions to the letter and would deal with any pranks or misbehavior thoroughly and immediately and with enthusiasm. And I think she'd be fabulous. And really, she deserves the very best of maid of honor outfits. And I am on board.
Nice. Yeah. I think that would work too. I don't think I would want her as my maid of honor or matron of honor, I guess, because she's, but
I'm unclear on that, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It depends. Are we talking Christmas Carol Muppets? Because then she's married.
Sure.
But I feel like Kermit and her have gotten married at some point. Maybe not. I think Scooter.
Great wedding planner. I mean, a stage manager as a wedding planner would be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Scooter could be a great wedding planner, and I'd be down for that.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us. Theme music was by Rachel Meyer Lachlan, and Muppets music was by Brenda Boss. Catch us next time when we'll discuss nerdery connections to the scripture readings for the 21st Sunday after Pentecost with special guest, Reverend Senator Sarah Trone Garriott. This podcast has been produced by us, Emily Ewing and Kay Roloff. For more fun, check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and now Blue Sky at Nerds at Church. Or contact us at nerdsatchurch@gmail.com.
Also, if you like what you've heard, rate us or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you want access to our uncut guest episodes and interviews, live Q&As, and more, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdsatchurch. It's cheaper than paying anyone to officiate for your wedding.
It's true. It's literally cheaper than any aspect of your wedding.
Yes.
Also, let us know on Blue Sky Facebook or Twitter who you would cast for Let's Make a Muppets Musical for this episode.
As the ancient Christians said,
Pax vobiscum.